Welcome everyone to episode 38 of the Business of Sport. 38 episodes already. My name is Ahmed Al-Houli, my co-host Mr. Robiel. How are you, buddy? Can you believe it? 38 episodes.
38, man. When's the DVD set coming out?
Well, would be quite the collection. Again, another week, another big week in sport. Another week filled with surprises, another launch, season launch. We had the NFL officially launch season week one of season 2023. And what a week it was. I mean, we spoke about the teams last week, the opening game. We said the Chiefs and the Lions should be an easy game for the Chiefs. It seems that Super Bowl championship hangovers has hit them too. The Lions beat them by 1 point. Ridiculous. What's going on?
Well, you know, that's a game that perfect storm for the Lions. You know, Travis Kelce doesn't play. Defense, you know, gets a pick six on a ball that goes right through Tony's hands. You know, and Chris Jones didn't play that game. Look, credit to the Lions. They played the game and won the game. The Chiefs, still had their chances, right? But at the end of the day, Thursday night football kicks off with the upstart Lions picking up where they left off last season, getting a win on the road against the defending champs. And that was just the beginning of the NFL excitement, as we'll certainly talk about. But again, massive audience, big viewership, and we're off and running for the NFL season, and lots more to talk about certainly today and in the weeks ahead. As we know, there's a team in New York that's got to figure some stuff out. I guess both of them do. One's got to figure out how to score. The other one's got a big replacement to figure out.
We'll definitely get there. Before we get there, the opening game attracted 27 million viewers, the biggest audience on TV since Super Bowl 57. I mean, that's insane. I mean, that's why the NFL was this week as well. The conversation of the broadcast world, the media rights world, where it's pretty much broken down. And the NFL brings in $20 billion a year in revenue. This year will be $20 billion. It's more than a Premier League, La Liga, Bundesliga, Serie A, League One combined. They're the biggest soccer leagues in the world. And soccer is an international sport. The Qatar World Cup attracted 2.5 billion views. And yet the NFL is generating more revenue than all the biggest leagues in the world. And that really comes down to the way they've gone about their media rights. You have five networks, and they bring to I think it's six yeah. different packages. They bring in a total of $12 billion a year in media rights alone. I mean, it's insane. And one of the things that I was chatting about yesterday with somebody actually is, if you look at the distribution of those media rights, you're pretty much covering the whole nation through the different age groups. You've got the YouTube TV, which is streaming, younger audience, more tech savvy. You got all the cable networks. You got Amazon Prime. You got, you know, so they've intelligently put together this media package that really covers them and gives them distribution to all ages. So amazing work by the NFL, and it shows, you know.
Yeah, obviously, they've got the six, various media packages, those are the domestic packages covering, all the age groups. And then you've got your international distribution with the zone, obviously the awareness and popularity that they built with, their international series with games in London and Germany, and potentially now the one coming to Australia. I mean, all that kind of stuff, you know, just again, puts them on the map. And you go back to, you know, you mentioned the, you know, the financial numbers. You know, one of the reasons that that can happen is because, you know, it's a U.S. based, you know, league, you know, the number one domestic, you know, economy in the world still, you know, and it's here. And it's one of the things we've talked about leading up with certainly some of the other leagues, why we're seeing, you know, what's happening with MLS and why that could, you know, that's a league and a sport and a league to watch as it rises. If cricket comes over here and gets the numbers that over here and gets, you know, that you see in other parts of the world, again, the money here, both sponsorship, media rights, et cetera, lends itself to those, you know, staggering numbers. And, you know, the NFL right now is certainly the beneficiary of being the 800-pound gorilla in the sports landscape, you know, from a media rights and a sponsorship rights. You know, certainly we're, you know, we watch, you know, soccer still the world sport, but, you know, the NFL is the money sport, as they say.
100%. And if we look at platforms like X, formerly known as Twitter, the NFL season opener, the NFL conversation in general, posts on the NFL were up 20% compared to last season. So we're definitely seeing more talk about the NFL. And I personally think it relates to the distribution of their media rights. That, like we said, the age groups, how they've gone about their strategy in breaking up these six different packages. And then if we look at what X has done as well, they've introduced a lot more video based features on their platform, which the favorite, one of the most favorite and popular things to do is when you see an amazing intercept or a touchdown or a catch, is to reshare it and talk about it. And now that's happening a lot more. And I think primarily that's the reason why these conversations are going up so much. Before, you would have to go to Instagram and TikTok and so on. No, and it's happening all there now.
Right. And look, the you know, this weekend, you know, we had the Chiefs, you know, obviously a highly popular team, playing on Thursday night, had a pick six go against them. Boom. You know, and they were a standalone game. You've got the, you know, the Giants and the Cowboys as a standalone game on Sunday night. And literally out of the gate, it's 14-0 before you can think straight. And, you know, highlights of a block kick return, you know, a fumble return, interception. I mean, you know, for those of us that play fantasy football and have the Dallas defense, it was a great night. You know, and again, I'll tie some of that into it as well, that, you know, getting fans engaged beyond just the score of the game, but fantasy does a great job of doing that. And then you have a Monday night game, high profile for all the other reasons, 9/11 in New York, Aaron Rodgers making his debut, you know, Josh Allen. I mean, it's a big, you know, divisional matchup, all those kinds of things, another standalone game with a massive audience. And then you have a, you know, a walk-off finish, you know, a crazy close game, turnovers, injuries, all those kinds of things, drama throughout the night. And, you know, the numbers, you know, certainly, you know, kept everybody compelled and glued to that game for lots of reasons. And you talk about the, you know, the activity on Twitter. I mean, there were events going on all, you know, all night, you know, all weekend, around that, you know, people engage, you know, opinions, you know, commentary, speculation, all kinds of stuff. And that's kind of what that platform thrives on. And it was an overdrive this weekend.
It was a perfect storm. It really was.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, and certainly the NFL has a way of having perfect storms every weekend somehow, because we'll see.
Yeah. So if we look at the numbers from Monday night, you had 22.6 million viewers across ABC, ESPN, and ESPN2. It's the most watched Monday night football game ever. And like we said, we had Aaron Rodgers play for maybe about a minute and a half.
Fourth place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But now, so let's look at the other side of things now. I mean, the NFL is in a bit of a pickle. We had a perfect storm. Now let's look at what's come out of that perfect storm. There's been some damage, unfortunately. So Aaron Rodgers, 3-year deal with the Jets, $112 million contract, $75 million in guaranteed money, right? You have now the Jets are scheduled for 6 primetime appearances and 4 more Sunday late afternoon window games. They're, for the first time, going to appear in the September 17th matchup at Dallas and the first ever Black Friday game, which Amazon is putting on.
Right.
Right. So what you have here is now is you have a historic moment, a new fixture that's being brought into the NFL, which with one of its huge partners, Amazon, do billions of dollars in revenue. And that day is going to be now focused as well as a day where the Jets, because of Aaron Rodgers, were meant to be playing and featured. No more Aaron Rodgers. Right. So what does the NFL do now?
Well, you know, again, as we were talking about just, you know, before the podcast, you know, the NFL has a flex schedule in some of its games, but obviously this is a primetime featured game. I don't know that if they first and foremost, it's down the road, right? You know, so we're down. What do the Jets do between now and then? Obviously, the Jets have lots of decisions to make at the position. They won the game, first of all, so you know they're 1-0. This may be the greatest unifier in all of football, and somehow the Jets, rally behind Zach Wilson or whoever ends up at quarterback, and they've got a tremendous defense. Their running game looked excellent. Maybe they are a quarterback away from a deep run, and everything works out great for the NFL. But if this is a 1-6, 1-7 team going into Black Friday, the interest level and the intrigue that you were hoping for a standalone game on Black Friday, maybe you're finding a game that you can move that game to a Sunday and bring something else forward on a Thursday or on a Friday. But again, you've got to be a little bit ahead of the game because you're changing some teams' travel schedules, moving someone up 2 days, and you've probably already planned to have the Jets playing on maybe the Thursday night before that, so that it's not a short week for them playing on Sunday then a Friday, or however that's going to work schedule wise. There's a lot of moving parts that are still ahead, but it's a predicament for sure. In some cases, that flex schedule can allow them to move some things around, but Thursday night games, Monday night games, and certainly this Black Friday game is a problem.
For sure. And if they do go in with poor form, it will affect the viewership, and it's going to really reflect on Amazon's numbers because, this is the first time they ever do this. They're bringing in a different approach to the game. So hopefully they do well. Last year, they had a not bad year, better than other years. But, it's one to sit back and watch and see how it pretty much plays out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's players get injured and things happen, and this could have happened the week before that game, kind of thing. But obviously, the reality is right now Aaron Rodgers is done for the year, so he isn't coming back. So this is you now can openly ask the question, now make a decision and plan accordingly if you're the TV partners, and I'm sure those are conversations that were going on this morning in the boardrooms in New York and across the country as it relates to any of the teams that would be affected by those changes. So
for sure,
as a fan, you really kind of wanted to see what this team looked like with Aaron Rodgers. But it's, football's a violent game and guys get injured. And, you know, we saw it last year as well. So, guys get hurt. And,
it is what it is.
You know, can't really undo that part of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll stay in football. We'll move on to college football. Coach Prime does it again. Big win against Nebraska. Second most watched game of the weekend. 8.73 million viewers tuned in Saturday on Fox. Best Pac-12 regular season game ever on Fox. 10th most watched regular season college football game ever on Fox. Fox Sports' second most streamed college football game in history. I mean, Colorado that issued 800 media credentials for the game. That's insanity. I mean, what an event. Coach Prime has just lit the world on the college football world on fire.
Well, you know, he's breath of fresh air is not the right term because obviously he's been coaching and his style, we've been exposed to it. He's now doing it at, you know, the Power Five level. And he's doing it at a school that went from one win to now they're two wins. And they're doing it with, you know, their offense shined first week. This past week, you know, it was their defense and they're allowing their offense to catch up and offensively, they put this game away. It's a big rival game, a good old, Big Eight rivalry from back in the day. It's got excitement going on in Colorado. They're 2 weeks away from hosting USC there. So you think 800 credentials was a lot for this game. If SC rolls in there undefeated and Colorado's undefeated when they roll in there, I think you're looking at 1,000 media credentials because you've got Shedeur Sanders moving up to number 3 in Mel Kiper's, QB listing. You know, both he and Hunter are in the Heisman race. Obviously, Caleb Williams is the reigning Heisman. USC is averaging 56 points a game. Plus, they're looking like their defense is now coming into form. And here we go. Coach Prime, I'm not doubting you. There's some people that are probably still doubting you. If there's ever a show me game, that's going to be a game that I think, I believe College Game Day is already planning to go there.
They are going there.
You know, they're going there. It is going to be the center huge of the football universe in a couple of weeks. And it's going to be a game. It'll be fun to watch. And that's and at the end of the day, that's this past weekend, Texas Alabama. I know we'll talk about it. That was an anticipated game. This game will be equally as anticipated, because of the players, because of the coaches, because of the ramifications, everything. I mean, it'll and it's taking place in one of the most beautiful settings. If you've been to a game at Folsom Field, I mean, it is gorgeous. I hope, let's not have snow. Okay. Not this early in the season, but if we get a pristine, glorious, Colorado sunny day. I mean, just the scenery will be massive. It'll be packed. I'm sure the play on the field will be high level. And win or lose, if they're competitive in that game, Coach Prime wins. If they win, obviously, Coach Prime, sign him up, lock him up for 10 years. I mean, because at this point, the numbers are going to start going through the roof. He's doing everything that he's said he's going to do. I mean, he's got, players playing. He's got alumni re-engaged. He's got fans, engaged. I mean, he's literally overnight changed the fortunes of an athletic program at the University of Colorado. Yeah. Worth every penny that he's being paid. One game at a time, he'll tell you the same thing. But hey, he's 2-0 right now. They got Colorado State this weekend. They're not looking past that. But that's a big game on the horizon for sure.
It's become the talking point now every single week. I mean, the media is all over it. And I'm very curious to see the economic impact that he's bringing to that city right now, because I think people from all over the country are flying in just to see and witness greatness. I mean, it's unbelievable. Texas.
He sold out the spring game. I mean, talk about economic impact. He sold out a spring game. So
that's pretty insane within itself. If we move on to Texas versus Alabama, the master versus the former apprentice, who's now a master in his own right. The apprentice beat the master in an awesome game. As our good friend Thomas called it, a boxing heavyweight match. It was tit for tat, nonstop, up and down. 8.8 million viewers tuned in. It peaked at 10.7. It was the most watched regular season college football game on ESPN since 2015. Very, very entertaining game. How did you see it?
Well, you know, again, it was a much talked about matchup. Texas had improved over last year, and Alabama had questions. I mean, you got Bryce Young graduating, you got Milroe stepping in at quarterback. Quinn Ewers was injured in the game last year, and it was still a close game at the end. So there's a lot of intrigue. You know, you mentioned Steve Sarkisian was the offensive coordinator under Nick Saban. Kirby Smart became the first assistant to beat him last year and now Steve Sarkisian becomes the first Saban assistant to beat him in Tuscaloosa. This is not an indictment at all on Nick Saban that he's slipping in any way. This is college football just ebbing and flowing, right? It's a talent pool. We talked a couple weeks ago about Clemson going up to Duke, and Duke's a good team. Clemson's a team that has not embraced NIL, has not embraced the transfer portal like other schools have. Alabama has gotten in the transfer portal, but they didn't get in the transfer portal at a absolute critical position, quarterback, like others did. So they kind of found themselves really late in the game trying to, have two guys on the roster duke it out in the spring, and then they got a couple guys in the transfer portal afterwards, but all the premium guys were gone at that point, that had gone into the portal. And Alabama, and I think at the end of the day, that was the position that really hurt them. Turnovers at that position. I mean, Quinn Ewers versus, Jalen Milroe was a mismatch. And that was the difference in the game. Alabama's got great athletes, running game, defense, all that kind of stuff. So does Texas. I mean, obviously, but it was at the premium skill position that they were elite, and Alabama wasn't. And Alabama's got to answer that. And that when Alabama has been off, that's been where they've been off in the past. And Bryce Young, Bryce Young elevated that position for them for a while. And now it's time that they need someone to elevate that position. Because there is now elite quarterback play in the SEC, if you're tuning in. There's some really good quarterbacks in that league now. Lane Kiffin's gonna sling the ball all over at you. I mean, Spencer Rattler's had two great weeks. We'll wait to see what Carson Beck becomes at Georgia, but Jalen Daniels better week last week than week one. But there are good quarterbacks in that league now. And if you're, it's first the SEC, but you start getting outside of that and playing, teams like, Texas, you're going to play teams like SC, you're going to play teams, Michigan, the quarterback play is very strong at those schools. That's just it's college football these days. And that's a position that we see getting reinforced every year in that transfer portal. So
would you say the additional resources through NIL has made a difference to the game, where now these schools can add a lot more than previously?
Well, in some cases, yes. In some cases, you know, it hasn't changed probably too much. But I think NIL has allowed some schools to to compete for players that they maybe couldn't have competed for in the past. There, as we mentioned, there are some schools that have not embraced it the way that others have. And at the end of the day, first and foremost, players need to play. That's always going to be a driving mechanism. And now, the transfer portal has been a massive player in that. But now what that used to be, hey, you can just get playing time by coming here versus there. And that was obviously, get you one step closer to the league. Now that you can have that freedom of movement and you can now use NIL as part of your leverage as an athlete, hey, I'm not only a top player at a position, but now, schools recruiting you have to have, not only the need for you, the position, but if you've got a couple of them, then what's your NIL deal versus an NIL deal? So now, now it becomes, free agency every year. Obviously, you've got the two transfer rule that's making the news. So you're seeing a lot of these players maybe as a one first time transfer, then a grad transfer if they decide to move a second time. But for the most part, most of them are looking for one move and one move to get a incremental NIL play. If they're leaving a school that either didn't have them under an NIL deal or they're moving strictly for playing purposes. So it's a factor. It's not going away. Ultimately, I think it's going to find us moving big time college football into its own space. I mean, this NCAA ruling on two time transfers, keeping kids out that transferred before the rule came into place. I mean, there are just the NCAA is starting to restrict commerce in programs, and there's too much money in play, and they're gonna find ways to just create their own league and take their ball and go over here and play by their own rules. And that'll be interesting in a whole different light. Do they move football out of the Title IX requirements and in order for athletic departments to better align themselves? So taking 85 scholarships out of the mix will allow athletic departments to even up, men's and women's sports more equally. You won't see teams getting cut. So there could be a positive side to that, but I think the governance of the NCAA over college football is starting to piss a little, some people off, certainly at the highest levels, especially those that are generating significant amount of revenue. When they have premium athletes sitting on the sidelines because of a technicality, it's going to become a problem because they've essentially become semi-professional, sport in college. So
yeah, for sure.
Let it operate a little bit more freely. And NCAA clearly is not prepared to handle it. And, they're acting like it's not their fault.
Yeah.
You created this problem. So
yeah, they pulled out from the beginning. They wanted nothing to do with it from literally day one, which was a couple of years ago now. But we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, it is Pandora's box, man. It's out there. It is what it is. I mean, obviously, we're seeing some fates of football teams change. With the arrival of talent, we're seeing the conference realignment and what it's done to it, certainly the Pac-12. We've got the remaining Pac-2 still undefeated. Certainly playing.
How is it the Pac-12 has its best year, almost probably its best year, before it pretty much dissolves and disappears.
Yeah, well, they had a pretty good preseason schedule. I mean, Arizona went out and played a really good game out at Mississippi State, lost in overtime. And look, you've got some dominant teams. Look, Oregon escaped from Texas Tech. Was fortunate to get out of there. Sometimes it's funny how that works. But Washington State and Oregon State are two teams looking for a home, and they're both undefeated right now, both ranked. So, go figure.
Interesting. Well, the next 12 months is going to be very, very interesting to see the way things go. But we'll be watching and we'll keep going because there was a huge event on the weekend. UFC 293, Sean Strickland shocked the world. Not many expected this, if any. I don't even think the UFC deep down wanted it to happen because now they have a champion where they can't control. This guy's all over the place. I'll tell you, some of the stories I was hearing here in Sydney, Australia, he's punching fans in the stomach. He's bringing fans up on stage. It was a big event. A big event. $10 million. $10 million the gate. The biggest ever in Kuros Bank Arena history. 18,000 people in there. It was beaming. The economic value is perceived to be $50 million plus on the city of Sydney. It's huge. But we have a new champion, ladies and gentlemen, who just does not care.
Who is unfiltered. If you've watched his press commentary before and after that event, Dana White didn't look terribly happy putting that belt on him. And, he had his post-fight comments, wondering if, Izzy was awake for that fight. I think you had tweeted out, two of the biggest upsets in UFC history have taken place down under. Yep. With Ronda Rousey being KO'd, there and for her first loss, and then now this, the style bender, losing his championship to a huge underdog,
he had no answers, Rob.
He didn't. It was really, it was odd. It was an odd fight. I won't equate it to, watching Mike Tyson get knocked out by Buster Douglas, but it was one of those things where, you kept looking to his corner going, what are you telling your guy to do? It's at some point, he's getting beat. He's got to get, at least in the octagon, you can get pissed. You can kick, you can attack. I mean, boxing, it's very, a little bit more structured. But UFC, you can be losing and go in and get a rear naked chokehold or get a leg kick and put yourself right back into in charge of a match. But he thought he was going for 15 rounds. It looked like he was sense of urgency.
Sometimes Rob, as our good friend Teddy Atlas says, the stars just don't align.
Yeah.
It just didn't happen.
No, it wasn't his night. There was nothing working for him.
He looked slow. He looked fatigued. He looked like cold. He looked cold. He looked like everything was telegraphed. He could not get past Sean Strickland's defense, and he was walking him down all night. Normally, Izzy's got style, he's got class, he's got timing, he's moving, he's changing his stance, he's, none of that, zero. Yeah. And then after that, he just looked like he didn't, even after that, he was in the press conference for like a minute, then he took off and he put a video up on Instagram of him in the bus. Didn't look like he cared much, he just wanted to go and party. So, I don't know.
The question is what's next. I mean, obviously there's, Strickland's going to have a title defense. Who's next in line for him?
Well, Dana's pushing for a rematch.
Well, I would hope that they get that because, constrict it. Look, if Strickland can back that up again, then he solidified himself as a champ. He didn't get lucky, so to speak. He didn't win it on a night where, you know, Izzy had a bad night. You know, if you beat him twice, you beat him twice, and there's just, you know, move on and go get the next match. But if he kind of, you know, lucky striked it a little bit.
No. You know, it was nothing like that. He was
no, that's what I'm saying.
Total, you know, dominance.
He won that fight, no question at all. Unanimous decision, period. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those things where can he replicate that against a top contender? What you don't want is for his next match to be, you know, him to get KO'd by somebody that's now Dana White is very Dana White's got this figured out. You know, Dana White wants, you know, there's certain people that certain fights he wants to see and things like that. And you know, again, earn your belts, but you know, he's a taker, and probably the best match is a rematch, because there's a lot of people out there going, what the hell was that? Right. So, hey, if he beats him again, move on. Hey man, he's got your number, you know,
that's
sorry.
Bad
yeah,
luck.
That's it. And now it's, you know, he's the champ. He's top of the hill, and he gets the next number one contender, and see if he can defend it again.
Speaking of numbers, today, Ari Emanuel, Sporting Mogul, pretty much launched the new organization, which goes under the ticker of TKO, which is the merging of the UFC and the WWE under one company on the stock exchange. I believe it was on the NASDAQ.
Yeah.
It opened up at $102 a share. So quite the start, quite the launch. Ari Emanuel is something special. That guy's always got an answer. Some of the stuff he's been doing recently, that company is going to be worth over $20 billion now. They're going to be a behemoth within themselves. You've got the WWE and the UFC. Like, they weren't dominant enough, now they're going to be even stronger. I'm surprised they actually got through the anti-competitive regulation. There must be a lot of lobbying happening in Washington, mate.
Yeah, well, you know, there's you know, you still got the, you know, the PFL out there with now Saudi money behind it. You've got a couple other wrestling leagues out there. You know, look, they're the 800-pound gorilla. That's it'll be interesting to kind of see if they start to intertwine the talent a little.
They were doing that already.
Yeah, I mean, just, you know,
it might just happen more now. Yeah,
yeah, it's just going to be, you know, more compelling. You know, do WrestleMania is just a. Do we see a UFC version of WrestleMania kind of thing? You know, going into a stadium with just, you know, mayhem. You know, do we see a tag team UFC? I don't know. God, that'd be crazy. You know, that'd be fun to watch. You know,
honestly, with Vince McMahon and Dana White and Ari Emanuel, the sky's the limit.
Hey, you know, they're entertainers. They're story writers. They're businessmen. I'm sure that those conversations are certainly happening, and potentially not too far down the road for something like that. So,
well, you talk about the PFL and the $100 million. You can have all the money in the world. If you don't have the know-how, it's not going to happen. These guys are absolute geniuses when it comes to these.
They're a couple laps ahead of everybody else, for sure.
Exactly. Let's just look at the ticket pricing for UFC 295, which is going to be in New York, Madison Square Garden. Would you believe how much the most expensive ticket is as of right now? Expensive ticket as of right now is $112,000, $236. $112,236 is the most expensive ticket for UFC 295. The previously the most expensive one was $287 at $31,730. So this is what we're talking about. I mean, nobody creates this much value by being average Joe Blade. Money can only take you so far. And but buying things like Bellator and that, what the hell are you buying? Why would you spend money on that? You can just knock on their door and they'll come to you anyway. They're all starving for fights and opportunities anyway. So anyway, I digress. It's a significant day in the world of sport, this this company coming live on the NASDAQ. We are seeing the beginning of something very, very special, I believe. It's going to be the convergence of the world of entertainment and the world of fighting on steroids. I mean, it's going to be unbelievable. And we look forward to talking about it moving forward.
Yeah, watching the brands that associate, you know, that cross-promote, that associate there, that, you know, that are obviously spending in both of those leagues, you know, the merchandising around them, obviously the broadcast. Yeah, it'll be interesting to kind of watch that, you know, that merger and that new company, new entity evolve. You know, does it create a trend down the road in other sports and things of that nature? So it'll be fun to watch.
I wonder where Slap fits in all this.
Oh, you know Dana White's got a plan. So
unbelievable. It really is. All right, we keep going. World of football. Manchester United has announced that Qualcomm subsidiary Snapdragon will become its front of shirt sponsor from the start of the 2024-2025 season. It'll replace the current sponsor, which is TeamViewer. But there's no mention about how much. All we hear is record breaking, but you know, where's the figure?
Well, you know, they're probably still dotting I's and crossing T's on the numbers. You know, obviously the Glazer family had this team on the blocks for a while. Apparently it's off now. Maybe this is the type of deal that says, yeah, we want to stick around and collect the money on this. Yeah, we're hearing, you know, we know that the largest current deal out there is 75 million euros with Real Madrid on the front of their shirt. You know, we were hearing what a, you know, 45 to 50 million pounds for Chelsea being asked for the front of their shirt. You know, so it, somewhere in there, are we throwing darts at a board here? Look, Manchester United is certainly one of the storied clubs in football. It was 80 million, you know, when Chevy put their name on it, that didn't really go over very well. It wasn't a successful relationship. I mean, as it relates to Chevy, it cost the CMO's job. I don't know that they sold a lot of cars around that. And the fan base really didn't like the bow tie on the front of their kit. They didn't think it looked right. I've seen some commentary just on what Snapdragon might look like logo wise on the front of the shirt. You know, mixed reviews, but they seem to prefer that over the TeamViewer layout. So, you know, here's what I'll say for fans. I love that you have an opinion on how it looks on the front of the shirt. At the end of the day, it could be just a number three, a zero, you know, whatever. If the commas are correct in the number that someone's paying to put on the front of that shirt, they could really care less what it looks like or how it how it appears on the front of the kit. It's just it doesn't necessarily factor in at the end of the day. How does it look on the shirt? I love the fact that fans love to chime in and express their opinion on whether or not the logo fits the front of the shirt. So at the end of the day, you're probably still going to buy the shirt because it's your club. You're going to want the new shirt. You're going to want the new design, three designs or whatever they're doing now, you know, you'll buy it and you'll wear it. Cause it's just how fans are. But I love the peanut gallery, you know, chiming in, but typically those are three year deals. You know, what are they saying? This could potentially be a 5-year deal.
Is there a number floating around?
Well, I haven't seen a number, but again, the numbers that I've seen, you know, that I've seen, you know, when they say it's the largest deal in Europe, that would mean it's more than the 75 million euro that that Real Madrid's currently getting on the front of their shirt. And if that's the case, then, you know, that's a number that's out there. You know, we'll see. We'll see if they disclose that at any point. But as of right now, we all get to speculate.
Very.
But it's, you know, it's next season, so, you know, it's a.
We have some time.
We have some time to work our sources, my friend.
There you go. All right, everyone. Thank you very much. It's been an awesome episode. Lots to chat about, as always. I'm sure we'll come back next week with a lot more with what the sporting world gives us. Thank you very much, Rob. Absolute pleasure. And to everybody watching, thank you all. Take care, everyone. See you later.
Take care.